Mining usually means going underground, but there's one company that's looking to go in the opposite direction. We're going to explain why in today's show. I'm Carl Azus. This is CNN Student News. First up, the race for the White House rolls on with yesterday's primaries in New York, Pennsylvania, Delaware, Connecticut, and Rhode Island. We mentioned yesterday that former Massachusetts Governor Mitt Romney is now the Republican Party's presumptive nominee. It takes 1,144 delegates to officially win that nomination. And even if Governor Romney won every delegate in every primary Tuesday, he wouldn't reach that number. The earliest he could hit the delegate milestone is in late May. Couple other big campaign moments on the horizon. One, the selection of a vice presidential nominee. There's a lot of talk now about whom Governor Romney might pick as his running mate. Two, the National Party Conventions. That's when Governor Romney and President Obama will officially be named as their party's presidential nominees. For more in-depth coverage on the 2012 election and to check out results from yesterday's primaries, go to the Spotlight section on our homepage and click on the CNN Election Center link.
Today's shout-out goes out to Ms. Molino's government classes at Rancho High School in Las Vegas, Nevada. What government agency is responsible for safeguarding U.S. borders? You know what to do? Is it the Justice Department, Homeland Security Department, Interior Department, or Defense Department? You've got 3 seconds. Go. The Department of Homeland Security is responsible for securing America's borders. That's your answer, and that's your shout-out.
Our next report today is from Suzanne Kelly, and it's about one specific border, the one between the United States and Mexico. It's patrolled by different agencies that are part of Homeland Security, like Customs and Border Protection, or CBP. The agents use different tools to do their jobs. Sometimes that means using advanced technology. Other times, it requires some equine assistance.
The terrain here is really pretty unforgiving. I mean, we just came down about a 200-foot drop a few minutes ago, and this tells you what they're up against. Now, post 9/11, CBP has taken sort of a all-threats environment stance. That means it doesn't matter whether these groups are people trying to come here illegally, drug runners, or potential terrorists. The threats and the environment in which they have to chase them down is just the same. These guys patrol this area day and night, and they're looking for signs. It's this ancient art of sign cutting, they call it.
What we're looking for is footprints, any impressions, anything in the dirt that would indicate somebody walking through here. So what we do in this case is we always want to look into the sun. We want to use that sunlight to reflect off the ridges in the ground or the impressions in the ground, and that's going to help define what we're seeing.
So I'm seeing, and I'm not trained to do this, but I'm seeing footprints here.
Yes, ma'am.
The bottom of a tennis shoe?
Exactly, tennis shoe.
This is the Joint Operations Information Center, really the nerve center for CBP of everything they've got eyes on. They've got eyes on the ground here. They're watching the ports of entry. They've got eyes in the air. And then over here, the guys who watch it 24 hours a day gather all of this information together and figure out what to do next.
That one single human intelligence source was reporting that they were using vehicles in order to beat us on the border.
The terrorism threat is the most important thing the CBP focuses on. It's the greatest threat to our nation, and all agencies and all departments need to be focused on their portion of how to stop that threat.
All right, so now we're at the Davis-Monthan Air Force Base, and we're going to get a very up-close look at the aerial assets that the Border Protection uses. What do you need the Black Hawk for along the border?
There's some places that we take them that would take probably 24 hours to get to. Sometimes we have to actually hover on one wheel, and they kind of jump out and
hover on one
because we can't land.
If patrolling on horseback is the more traditional approach to keeping the border secure, this is the future. This is a predator. It's got a 66-foot wingspan, weighs just a touch over 8,000 pounds. But here's the real payoff. It has a $2.5 million camera. It can take pictures day or night, and it's also equipped with an infrared sensor. That's a big deal because it can direct people on the ground exactly to the location of a target.
It is very difficult to seal any part of the border 100% guarantees. We don't offer any guarantees in the Border Patrol.
On your shoulders sits the responsibility of making sure there's not another 9/11 in this country.
Is that true?
How you look at your job?
Every day. Every day when I put on this uniform.
Is this legit? The main asteroid belt in our solar system is in between Mars and Jupiter. Totally true. Thousands of these rocky space objects are located in the belt.
There's a company that thinks those asteroids could be a gold mine for precious metals. We're talking about substances like platinum that, of course, are used in jewelry, but also in cell phones and other electronics. Now, you might be thinking, what good can these things do if they're all the way out in the asteroid belt? Well, that's where a lot of asteroids are, but not all of them. And this company's plan is to run mining operations on asteroids that are nearer to Earth. One of the company's founders said a single 100-foot-long asteroid could contain 25 to 50 billion dollars worth of platinum. Right now, all this is just an idea. The first step would be to put a telescope in orbit to look for asteroids with precious metals. It could be a couple years before that happens. In order to turn that space mining idea into a reality, the company will probably need to hire some people with backgrounds in STEM fields. It stands for science, technology, engineering, and math. And those industries are in pretty high demand, but they're not the most diverse. Poppy Harlow looks at efforts to encourage more minority students to get involved.
We're going to take those stakes out, load them with explosives, and shoot it.
In 4 years, this massive cave will be New York City's Second Avenue subway.
The tracks are going to be where those two tunnels are.
But the team of engineers investigating this site isn't quite ready for their own $4.5 billion job yet. They're undergrads at Bucknell.
It's really just interesting to see what actually goes on as an engineer.
James Colvin is part of a program to get minority college students to stick with the sciences. African American and Hispanic students drop out of engineering majors at a higher rate than whites, both at Bucknell and nationally.
On faculty and staff, we don't see the colored faces that give us the inspiration that people out there who are just like us can actually go and do the job.
The STEM workforce, that's science, technology, engineering, and math, is only 6% Hispanic and 6% African American, far below their presence in the overall workforce. Blacks and Hispanics also have much higher unemployment rates than the national average.
We need more scientists, need more engineers.
Watch yourself.
STEM workers make 26% more than their non-STEM counterparts.
To come here and see a face of color who's in charge, who's a construction manager of this whole project, just makes me want to work so much harder.
Engineering firm Parsons Brinkerhoff is managing the Second Avenue subway project and partnered with Bucknell to mentor minority students.
Why does this matter for their future?
These are great jobs. They're high-paying jobs. They're professional jobs. This is the bedrock of the middle class. I see it as a fundamental fairness issue.
What are you going to do after you graduate?
Maria Clave is president of Science and Engineering College Harvey Mudd. The school has had tremendous progress fixing the gender gap in its student body, but not the minority gap.
If we leave out big sections of our population, so whether it's females or African Americans, Hispanics, if we don't have diverse teams working on problems, we don't get nearly as good solutions.
We're going to fall behind.
We're going to fall behind.
We have a new post up on our blog today based on a story that spans the Pacific Ocean. A man found a soccer ball when he was walking along a beach in Alaska. Turns out the ball belongs to a teenager in Japan. It was swept away during last year's tsunami. The American who found it is planning to return the soccer ball in person next month. It got us thinking about sentimental value. The soccer ball isn't worth a ton of money, but it has a special meaning to this teenager in Japan. So what we're asking on our blog is, what possessions have sentimental value to you? Let us know at CNNStudentNews.com. Before we go, we're paying tribute to teachers. At the White House yesterday, President Obama honored more than 50 teachers who were named Teacher of the Year by their states and territories. The woman receiving the award is Rebecca Milwaukee, a middle school English teacher and the National Teacher of the Year. She talked about the qualities that make an exceptional educator.
I am not the best teacher in America. There isn't one. All across this nation, there are millions of teachers who do the work that I do, and many do it better. But what I do have are the qualities that some of the best teachers have. I have an absolute passion for my work. I have a bottomless well of belief in my students and their potential. I have a thirst for getting better at what I do every single day, and I have a warm and welcoming heart for all students and the unique gifts that they bring to my classroom.
Congratulations to Ms. Milwaukee and all the teachers of the year. Not many puns today. You can chalk it up to us running out of time. The class is back in session with more headlines tomorrow. For CNN Student News, I'm Carl Azuz.